Hi, I'm Sadek.
Firstly, I'm Christian. But also, fuck Jermaine Cole. Those bars are transphobic. We're not talking about the album. He already fell off. Let's talk about some good shit. First and foremost, we're not going to have this discourse because it's not a part of the anime stuff. This is also Voxels, a podcast about not J. Cole. Suzume, though, is now on Netflix. Made by the same director as Your Name. You should watch it.
I actually watched this like sometime last year, I think. And it is... It's interesting because it's like I don't want to like get too much into it, but it's like it's very much like a movie made for Japanese people, made by Japanese, but for Japanese people, because it's a lot of the cultural context for this. I feel like if you're not Japanese, like if you don't live in Japan specifically, like you're not gonna get a lot of the like underlying themes of this movie. But it's a really good movie. It's an interesting movie, and Makoto Shinkai is one of my. If I'm going to watch like an anime movie, it's going to be either like a Studio Ghibli movie or Makoto Shinkai movie. So that's those are the only two. So let's talk about the biggest album of the year, I suppose. I don't know. So far, we've have the much anticipated country album from Beyonce called Cowboy Carter. What are your thoughts first? Like, I want to hear your thoughts before I get into it. So what are your like overall like thoughts on this album?
Beyonce has a 3-part renaissance sort of series going on. This is part 2 of it. The first part was 2022's renaissance, which was an amazing revival of house music and all these great themes we talked about on the old podcast. I will drop a link to that episode because I think it's still pertinent. But so now we have Cowboy Carter, which is the follow-up act, which is a country-inspired album, not necessarily a country album, as Beyonce said in her Instagram post announcing, you know, this is a country album, this is not a country album, this is a Beyonce album. I have a lot of thoughts on this album, mostly that I just appreciate, I think, on a spiritual level, just like reclamation by, like, Black folks and Native folks of quote-unquote Americana, right? You know, Beyonce's holding a U.S. flag and dressed as a cowboy on the riding a horse. And that is important imagery, I think, because you sometimes get a there's like, I think, a thread of people online and in general discourse that are kind of like, you know, fuck my national identity, blah, 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 which I understand. Like, I'm not trying in any way to say nationalism is a good thing. But for better or worse, you are born in the place you're born and you do profit and do, you know, benefit in some ways from what that place has done to different levels. Obviously, marginalization is a very real thing, but like in my example, unfortunately, I was born in the U.S. So unfortunately, I am complicit in some of the things that the U.S. has done, and like it, and I'm like in a macro level, not in like, you know, like obviously, you know, I'm not responsible or Beyonce's not responsible for like atrocities, but I think to completely deny that and to just completely throw away that part of your identity is that's like the place you're born at is a little bit disingenuous and a little bit like, I just don't want to deal with it ism in a way. Whereas what Beyonce's doing in this album is like saying, hey, this country music stuff's problematic. Sure. There's a lot of, you know, right wing folks and all this stuff in country music. People do not want Beyonce in country music. So she's saying with this album cover, I think before we get to the music, is actually, here's this American flag. I'm dressed up as a cowboy. He's part of my history is also contained in that. And it's not just for you.
Yeah. So she's saying she's American and she's like specifically like she's American. She's from like cowboy country. Like she was like, I'm from Houston, like Galveston. Like I think she said Galveston, Texas. Right. And she said like Louisiana. So she's like, she's from the deep South. Right. She's like South South. So she's like, she's claiming that she's like, okay, I'm from here. Like, if this isn't country, like on the first track, right? Like, she's like, if this isn't country, then what is, right? Like, if all of this is, if me making this album is not country, then what is country music, right?
If saying to your roots, right, is not like country, then what is? And I think that is such an important setter for the album too. Like not setter, but you know, like a taste of, or you know, foreshadowing for what this whole album is. Because once again, it comes down to reclamation, and I think it's a lot easier or less obvious maybe on the play she was doing on the original Renaissance. As you know, no one's ever. I mean, you have Skrillex, right? But no one's ever said Skrillex is appropriating house music from Black people, right? It's slowly been appropriated away from them, and you know, the origins are Black. But in country, it's a lot more stark in that. You know, cowboy itself, the term cowboy was a derogatory term meant for slaves who are herding cows. right? Like that's the, or was, I think it was cow men or like cow herders, right? And then cow boys is what they called slaves who were doing that. And to use that language and to reclaim it is so important. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on it, so I will let you start talking. But all I'm going to say is I like this album a lot. It has its problems, but no, what are your thoughts on it?
This is an interesting, I have to sit with this one a little bit because personally, I'm not like, I'm not into country, American country music. So I had to like sort of listen to this album like multiple times, like listen to the Switch Talk Pop episode about it and sort of understand the album as like from like thematically, right? Not just like, there's a lot of not happening on this album. This album's like a tribute, not just to American country, but like the history of American pop music, right? Like there's different formats of music here. It's not just the kind of country you'd hear on like country radio, right? Like it's like a lot of, there's a lot of different genres happening, a lot of different styles. There's features. Obviously the two singles we had 16 Carriages, right? And we had Texas Hold'em. And I think between 16 Carriages and Texas Hold'em, I think they were deceptive. I think people came into this, and I came into this expecting like the whole album to be just like those two tracks. Like those two tracks would be like musically, sonically representative of the rest of the album. And they're really not. Like it's like Texas Hold'em is like a really good track. And so is 16 Carriages, but it's like most of the album is like not country.
Here's what plays into this too. So this is, I subscribe to the Beyonce subreddit, which is not, you know, it could have gone one of two ways. It went in a more interesting way. So the vinyls are not the full track list.
Oh.
So the whole run from the Linda Martell show all the way until Sweet Honey Bucking are cut from the vinyl. It's only about like 23-ish tracks on the vinyl. And the vinyl is a different album cover that is Beyoncé. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of it, but it's her mother's middle name. So what that tells me is, because apparently in another interview, she was saying this record was actually supposed to come out first. It was supposed to be this one and then Renaissance. But during the pandemic, she was like, people probably need more of a house album right now, right? Like to get back into the world. Like she felt that it was more important to release that house album versus this one. So what it's telling me is, I imagine most of like the country quote unquote songs, right? The more blues inspired ones were all recorded in the pandemic beforehand. And it's a second pass that kind of turned it into the sprawling curves it is right now. That's what it tells me. Originally, it was a lot more than those singles. Those singles are probably like what the whole album is supposed to be. But, you know, after I guess going on tour and playing Renaissance, you know, you started getting, you know, tracks like, we're skipping ahead, like Riverdance, right? Riverdance absolutely could have been a cutoff of Renaissance. So it just makes sense.
Personally, I would have preferred if the album was a lot less sonically diverse. I personally found it a little bit not cohesive. Like it felt like a collection of tracks less than an album, right? It felt a little too long. Like 27 tracks is a lot of tracks, and an album's like more than an hour long. I felt like it could have been like some of the tracks like you mentioned could have been cut, and I think I would have preferred the album. I would have liked the album more for that reason. But I'd say it would start with, the big track for me is the cover here. We have a cover of Jolene by the sort of track by Dolly Parton. I personally, this is going to be our friend, our mutual friend Jack says this is going to be a hot take, but I don't know if it's a hot take. I just think,
listen, we had one white man validate this take, so I think it's okay.
yeah, he agreed. So I think Beyonce's cover of Jolene is a better version of the original, and I don't mean this in a way where I think the original is bad or anything. I like the original as well. Like the original is a great track, but I just prefer Beyonce's sort of like the Beyonce's take to it. And it's not just a cover, also like she added stuff to it. There's new lyrics in here, like there's lyrics that are not there in the original. And that line in the chorus, like, you know, I'm still a Creole banjo bitch from Louisiana. That shit, like, I love it. Like, it's just,
I love the throwback to Lemonade.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. I just really love, like, this, what she's done with a very famous, sort of probably one of the most famous American country songs of all time. So that's cool.
Conversely, too, Blackbird, the other cover on this album, it's objectively better than the Beatles versions because the Beatles kind of suck.
Yeah. Okay, that's the other hot take we're coming here with, I guess, is that I... Okay, so I haven't listened to the Beatles since I was a teenager, and even then I was like, you know, this kind of mid, this kind of overrated, like, what's the big deal? I don't know if I would appreciate it more now, but my opinion has not shifted on this, and I would agree that, you know, I like this version. It's a short track, it's not a very long track, and that's another one of these things.
It's the same backing as the original, so it's the same backing instrumentation as the original version. To actually to make this a little less spicy, so it's basically she took the same guitar and clapping, and the reason it's one sided is that the original version was recorded when stereo was new, right, back in the 60s. So some people were figuring out stereo stuff, and then it was her and I want to say the other ones, Tanner Adele and who else, and Brittany Spencer, were all other country singers that she had also sing the cover. It's a really good cover. What I wish she would have done, though, is so off of I don't know if you listened to Motomami from Rosalia, like, a few years back when that came out, there's a cover of, like, a Willie Colon. It's from the 60s. It's a salsa track, Delirio de Grandeza. There's a cover of that song, and what she did is she basically had her theme in the DAW make it a little more mono, because it was also another track from the 50s 60s when stereo was new. And you would just have, like, horns in just blaring in one ear.
Yeah.
And I really think Beyonce could have just make the guitar a little more mono. You know, panning is cool, but just I don't the guitar in one ear makes me feel like my headphones are broken.
I just think that style of production just doesn't work on a modern album. Modern people, like, modern audiences, I feel like I'm not going to appreciate the sort of very subtle the sort of the mono aspect of those tracks from, like, the 60s.
Wait a minute. Oh my god, I switched to Android, so I don't know. What does this album sound like in spatial audio? Holy shit, someone who has AirPods Pro and an Apple Music subscription, I actually want to know how Blackbird sounds, because the stereo track, it's hard guitar on the right and then claps and crickets and shit on the left ear. How is that mixed in spatial audio? Someone please, who uses Apple products, please, like, hit me up and let me know how it sounds in spatial audio. I'm actually extremely curious.
I'm curious as well. I mean, I could, like, subscribe to Apple Music for a month to check it out, but with the AirPods Pro, right, I could check out the spatial audio stuff. I'm curious. Yeah, I'm curious how this sounds. Like, I'm speaking of, like, sound wise, I think production wise, this album is, like, solid. Like, it's well produced. I mean, that's not surprising. Beyonce's, like, last few albums have all been, like, extremely well produced, very expensive production, I suppose.
I'm gonna interject from on the production side of this, and I mean, there's a compliment. She does so much well sonically with the backing instrumentation, but never has this overpower the vocals, and I find that's a problem with a lot of albums that try to experiment. It's like you have a strong focus on, like, woodwind instruments, all these instruments, guitar is in the background, and then you're the vocals just, like, kind of get muddied below it, right? If I cover my hand in my mouth and try and talk, like, it doesn't happen here.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not here. And whoever does the mixing on her albums is like super very very, very good. And it just sounds like it's just a treat to listen to, like, sonically. Like, I one of my favorite tracks on here, track 11, Daughter. I just really love this track. This is like a murder ballad, right? It's like really kind of like sort of.
That's the one with the opera at the end, right? With the opera stuff.
Yeah, there's the Italian Italian bridge where she sings in Italian, which I want Beyonce to sing in more Italian. Honestly, this sounds pretty good. I love it.
Holy shit! Hold on a minute. All right, hear me out. Nobu Uesumi. I'm butchering that name. But the guy who did the music for Final Fantasy, Yeah, yeah. Imagine like one of those tracks with Beyonce doing opera on it.
My God, that's I don't think that's ever gonna happen, but we can dream. I would love to. She does like, and that's another thing I should point out when we're talking about like Beyonce singing is Beyonce's singing a lot in this album, and which I love it. I love her. Like she's showing her range, and she's doing great. Like it sounds like the singing sounds super super fucking good. So I'm a big fan of that. I'm very much enjoying all the singing. How do you feel about the features? I know we talked. There are a few features here. Shaboozy on Spaghetti, which is like a sort of tribute to like Western movies. Spaghetti Westerns, you know.
That's a good track, but it could have cut it. Just to be honest with you, it is a good track, but it does not fit anywhere in the cadence of this album.
Yeah, it's a little, I feel like it's sort of in there to like, hey, look, I like those old Westerns with Ennio Morricone music on it, you know. I think it sampled like the sound of that, and it's like it's very much like a reference to those movies.
Also, Beyonce says love and respect, but Avengers Endgame bars are whack.
Wait, what? Which track are we talking about?
She starts Spaghetti. She starts the beginning saying like, "At the snap of my fingers, I'm Thanos," and I'm like, Beyonce, come on, get Hova in the studio.
Yeah, she does try to. Okay, we will talk about the rapping later, I guess.
However, though, the other Shaboozy tracks, we're talking about features. I don't know if this track is objectively good. I'm pretty sure it's not. But Sweet Honey Bucking is such a good song. I love it so much. I do not know why, but the Pharrell beat on Bucking is so good. But it literally is like horses galloping as the drums, and I'm pretty sure that's really corny.
Yeah, it is. The beat is really good. I just don't like the song itself, but like the beat is like Pharrell beat is fucking wild. It's like, what is going on?
It's but like all the features are good, right?
Yeah, all the features are good. I think my favorite feature, surprisingly, is like the Post Malone feature.
Not the Miley Cyrus one?
I like the Miley Cyrus one, but I feel like the Miley Cyrus one didn't have enough Miley Cyrus. Like it was like kind of like they were doing like a duet, and I feel like I wanted to hear Miley Cyrus by herself more on the track, and I know she can sing, so it's kind of like the track is just like her and Beyonce doing a duet on Two Most Wanted, right? And I just really wanted her to sing more, like Miley's like had to have a verse on her or on. But yeah, I like the Post Malone feature, surprisingly. I wasn't expecting a Post.
It's because Beyonce got him to fucking sing and not listen. If you get Post Malone on a Metro Boomin beat, which has happened before, Metro reverbs and tries like Travis Scott his voice. But Beyonce was like, no, you're going to sing and it's going to be mixed properly without a fuck ton of reverb. And it sounds, when you get Post Malone to sing, he can actually sing really well. It was.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
He hit the country twang and everything going perfectly. It was nice. It was good.
Yeah, he did. It was really good. It's a good feature, Levi's jeans, you know, it's a good track. It's fun. One of the other tracks, I suppose, that is too short, in my opinion, is Desert Eagle. Desert Eagle, I feel like that's a track that could have been longer, and it's a very fun track because it's just Beyonce being horny. Like it's the one where she says like everything bigger in Texas, big body busted open, like that stuff, you know. I wanted a longer track on that. That track is way too short. Tyrant is probably like one of my like favorite tracks. It's just a really really fun. That beat, that production by DA God That Dope is just,
it's a fiddle with an 808, which is all you needed to know.
It's so good. I love it. I want more of this kind of beats. Like honestly, this sort of mixing of like acoustic instruments with synths. Like yeah, give me that shit. Like give me. Good stuff. So that's all I have to say, I suppose. I don't have any other sort of strong. I feel like the album closes out on Amen. It's a good closer. It's a good closer, but it feels like there's a little bit too much like bloat in this album between the first track and the last track. Like some of the tracks that could be cut out. They could have cut out Sweet Honey Bucking, I think. Honestly, I really wish, like, you know. How do you feel about Yaya, by the way? Yaya is, like, just...
I think Yaya is an important track to have on this album for the reason of... It's okay, so I'm of two minds on it. I don't think it's a bad track.
No, it's not bad.
But I also think it's interesting in that that kind of like 50s, 60s pop music has not made a revival, you know? Like you have boy bands and girl bands, right? With K-pop bands. But no one's gone for that style of like girlish, boyish kind of bands, right? Where for those who have not listened to it, Yaya basically think about like stereotypical 50s, like, you know, doo-wop kind of music. And it was kind of like that, but flipped a little bit. And I think for what Beyonce's trying to go with on this album of reclaiming things, Cowboy Carter, you know, like holding the American flag, keeping that part of it is important. So I wouldn't cut it for that reason alone. Honestly, I'd probably, Willie Nelson's great, but I'd probably cut all the interludes. The interludes would be cut. I would also cut Spaghetti. I would cut, honestly, from the Linda Martell show, Keep Yaya, Oh Louisiana, Desert Eagle, Riverdance. I would just go from Two Hands to Heaven, Tyrant, and then Amen, and cut Sweet Honey Buckin'. Like, keep it to 20 out, 19, 20 tracks, maybe at most.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that's, it's a little bit too long. But I, overall, I think I'm coming, like, I'm positive on this album overall. I think overall, this is like a strong, thematically, it's like a strong showing from Beyonce, and I'm like, It's interesting to me. Now I'm thinking that they mentioned that this album was supposed to come first. I am just curious how we would have felt if we'd gotten this one first and then we got Renaissance. It's just weird. But yeah, I'm like enjoying this album. I've been listening to it. You know, a few tracks on.
I mean, I think it's the right move though, right? To get Renaissance first piece. Imagine in current climate of today to have a house music album come out. It would have just felt weird, right? Like, it would have been a good album, but I think 2022, you know, not, COVID's not over. It's a real thing. But, you know, with more clubs and stuff opening up, and then now in a, unfortunately, a presidential year, having Beyonce be like, no, I'm going to reclaim my Americanness is a very interesting.
That's timing-wise, it's very much, yeah, that's.
So here's the question, though. What genre is Act 3?
Oh, boy. I feel like she could like do an R&B album.
I don't think it's R&B. No. You know what it's going to be.
What is it?
Hard rock, soul, or funk, or a mix of those.
Oh, two. She's going to do hard rock. That's
or soul or funk, right? I like all I'm saying is if you see Thundercat, you know, in the studio Beyonce, you know what you're getting for Act 3.
Yeah. I'm whatever it is, whatever genre it is, I'm looking forward to it because so far to so far, she's been like innovating on these like genres. Like she's taking these genres and she's like doing them like, you know, justice. She's getting producers in, she's getting features in like that makes sense. And like she's like these feel like somebody who really cares about like these sort of cares about these genres in a real way. And sort of it feels like they're respectful of the genres. And so I'm really curious. Like I'm really curious what's going to happen next. I'm sure it's going to be in like two more years. So we got to get like the next part of this trilogy. So
I think it's just the run Beyonce has been on since 2013's Beyonce self-titled album. It's been fucking wild. Normally you have huge artists. I'm just go for Taylor Swift. I don't care. You have people like Taylor Swift, right? Where they still make good music, but I don't think every Taylor Swift album is genre defining in the way that Beyonce albums have been, right? Beyonce albums are like pop music, yes, first, but they are also artistically interesting. And that's something I really appreciate, especially now, you know, one day we'll probably have the podcast on. Today's not the day, but you know, everything Disney announced is just fucking sequels, right? In a time where everything's a sequel, you at least have like Beyonce, I mean, like, let's not let's make new ideas, you know, take old ideas, sure, and have it influence what the new is, but this is still new music, right? Like, it's not a country album where it's just my tractor sexy and different, you know, musical styles. It's actual, like, artistic intent and creativity here. And, shout out Beyonce for consistently putting in the work to artistically push things forward. Jay-Z should take some influence from that, and
I feel like Jay-Z's just retired from music. I don't think he's making after four, he's not it seems like he's not interested in making any.
Well, I guess we have Kendrick then, because at least when Kendrick drops, he's also still trying that, right? Where, say whatever you want about Mr. Morale, he's at least still trying to make something new and you know, artistically important. Fuck J. Cole. But this album's fantastic. Super excited for what comes next. And Taylor Swift, what if you tried something like this?
She could do country. I mean, she did country. She used to be
the thing is, she's just a singer-songwriter, like love songs, which is great, but she could, Taylor Swift could do a narrative album, right? She has in her to do like really cool concept albums. She could go out there and do that. And I would hope that at some point, making the same kinds of music gets kind of boring and she would try to artistically venture out into other things.
So let's talk about anime. We promised this was going to be coming after 2 weeks ago when we did our episode there. So the winter season has wrapped up, right? So we're in the way properly wrapped up. So what's the report from winter 2024?
Yeah. Report from Anime Land. Well, dialing in from the land of anime. I'm not going to finish. This would be very problematic. But okay, so let me just preface by saying, ideally, we'd also have the spring 2024 pickup, but not every first episode is aired. It's usually like a month, right, where it switches over from the winter to spring for the new season. So I want every episode to air, so I at least have a chance to watch one and then give everyone thoughts on it, right? So we're just going to do the wrap-up. So I have two lists here. We have dropped and kept. And as of most things, most shows get dropped. You know, like this is just for anything in life, even our own podcast. If you don't like it, don't feel obligated to consume it, right? If the YouTube video is boring, you know, if you're 10 minutes into a Gamers Nexus video on some GPU and you're like, I don't even give a fuck about these charts, exit out the video. It's, you know, you can't, and I'm half being serious because like, I feel like sometimes, especially nowadays where everyone's always talking about how much money they make or how shit, you know, payouts are, I feel like there's like a personal responsibility you sometimes feel, or maybe it's only me, where like you're watching them like, shit, I need to finish this because I know the creator, you know, is just one guy running this. But you actually don't, you know? How you spend your time is like the factors that make that person need to like push so hard for content is not something you take upon yourself, right? That's more of like a societal thing, right? Where one day if we had UBI, you know, all that stuff, all social safety nets, those are the fixes to those problems and not just you watching YouTube videos you don't like so you can, yeah, exactly, you know, make sure that person gets a payout from YouTube premium money. Like, exactly. It's really not how that works. And that's how, yeah, I feel about anime. If the show's shit, I'm going to drop it because I do not live in Japan and I do not have any influence on how anime creators are paid. They should get paid more. I would pay more for Crunchyroll if they were paid more. But those are factors that are really up to the Japanese market. It's not anything us in the West can do much about. So the shows that are dropped, there's a lot in here. Honestly, I'm just going to go over the ones that I think dropped for problematic reasons. Sasuke and Peeps, why was it dropped? Weird underage relationship vibes.
Of course.
Nope. Hokkaido Gals are super adorable. Why was that dropped? Boring romance? Like, it just wasn't well written. You know, it was whack. The Wrong Way to Use Healing Magic. That one was dropped. I need to pick it up. That one was just like I didn't have time. And I'm sure if I finished it, it would be like a good B-tier anime. But like I said, I don't, you know, you don't need to watch B-tier shows. Classroom of the Elite, this is season 3, if you remember what we're talking about. Why did I drop this one? The writers has weird views about alpha men, and it became really apparent in this season.
Oh, okay. He's doing the red pill shit. Is that okay?
Yeah, like the main character got a lot red pilled.
Yikes.
It was less bad in the light novel.
Well, unfortunate.
So what else we got dropped here? Torture or Time for Torture Princess, that show's just whack. Dr. Elise got dropped because the last 4 episodes were anime original and the writing took a nosedive into the ground. It was very, very not good. Fluffy Paradise. This is a show about the girl gets reincarnated as someone who can just pet animals.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, why did this get dropped? What happened to this one?
They kept trying to introduce like very weird other world politics into a show about a child that wants to pet animals, and it did not work out. She somehow got like intertwined in the politics of, you know, humans trying to kill beast people.
I feel like the show didn't need to. Like, I don't.
Yeah, it really didn't need that. And The Weakest Tamer began a journey to pick up trash. This one got dropped. I don't want to ever call a show boring, but it was just kind of boring. Sometimes when you do boring shows, you can do a boring show, you know, like cute people doing things is a genre. But this one, just the pacing was weird. I feel like this is probably a show that reads a lot better than it watches. You know what I mean? Like the books probably be a lot more interesting because you can power through the books as fast as you're able to read, right? So yeah, a lot of drop shows, but that's normal, you know? The Strongest Tanks Labyrinth Raids, a tank of a rare 999 resistance guard, kicked out of the hero's party. I can't even say the fucking name. Savior Complex, where he gets a slave girl for a kind of person that's outlawed, and that slave girl is like a young person, of course, because of course, and it's creepy. Sorry to anyone who thinks that because it's like cartoon stuff, it's okay. It's not. It's really not. But shows that kept the positive side, A Sign of Affection, the romance show with the Death Girl, is as sweet as you thought. Watch the show. Please watch it. It's like 12 episodes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know. Like, I've only watched like the first episode, two episodes of like Solo Leveling, I think, but I haven't watched like any other one. So I'm just like, I just don't want to try it. Like, and I feel like I'm wasting my time. So now
you will not be wasting your time with the Deaf Girl romance.
Okay.
You
won't. Okay. Good. All right.
Well, and to be clear, I'm not going to, this is a partial spoiler, but it's not really a big spoiler. It does not take 12 episodes for them to get together. So you're not being baited the whole season.
All right. That's good. That's good.
There's actual episodes of them dating and all that. Watch Mr. Villain's Day Off. Why did I say watch Mr. Villain's Day Off? The show is called Mr. Villain's Day Off. I can read URLs. I know how to use computers. But yes, Mr. Villain's Day Off is, it was just a fun, silly watch about, you know, he's trying to take over the world, but in his free time, he just wants to go watch pandas at the zoo. It is as in-depth or thoughtful as you think it is, or you say it's not. But you know what? It's a great palate cleanser, and I did not regret any of it. This is a Dungeon, I believe, is coming back for season two. This is one about making food in a dungeon. It's great. This is great. A popcorn watch. The Undead Unwanted Adventurer. This one had the right balance of, it's a B-plus tier show, you know what I mean? It's not an A-tier show, but the story is well written enough. The main character is likable enough and a nice enough of a person that you just want to see him succeed, and that really drives the plot. I think the main character drives the show. You know, if it was a different main character, even with the narrative the way it was or the story it was, it would not have worked. So not noteful, not going to be like a top 10 one, but I did not regret my time with it. The Foolish Angel Dance with the Devil. Now this one though, so this one is a comedy show, right? It was like, oh, he's a devil, she's an angel, she, you know, forces him to work for him, right? It started as a gag show, but then it just turned into a really fucking sweet romance show. It actually, like, they did the swerve very well. By the end of it, I was enjoying all the episodes. Seventh Time Loop, the villainess enjoys a carefree life married to her worst enemy. That one also was done very well. They mixed, like, the world's politics with the whole villainess isekai narrative. I don't want to spoil it, but honestly, like, it was a very thoughtful way of, you know, if I knew what the future was, how could I prevent that from happening again? You know, and use skills learned in a past life. And it was also a very cutesy romance story. So I did not regret my time with it. Soul Leveling, this is Crunchyroll's big shonen, I guess, push.
Yeah, this was the one I watched a couple episodes of.
Yeah. It's a battle anime, you know. It's sometimes you need to watch a good fight, you know. And it's going to, I think they renewed it for like 5 seasons.
Holy shit.
So this is going to be here for a while because it's one of the most popular shows on Crunchyroll right now.
Interesting. Okay.
And then they funded the first season too. So yeah, it's going to be around for a while.
So this is based on a Korean like manhwa, right? Like it's.
Yep. That's already been finished. It's apparently a shorter one. So it looks like they're probably going to adapt the whole thing in anime. Which shout out once again, I think Seventh Time Loop was also a manhwa or would have been Elise. I think it was Dr. Elise, but one of those two is a manhwa as well. And the last one, bottom tier character Tomozaki, season 2. Surprisingly good. I thought it would have been cringy, but...
Wait, is this the one where he's like a gamer and he doesn't understand? Okay.
Yeah, he yells about like Smash Brothers comparing it to life in that one cringy clip I sent you a few years back. This season involved romance and also a lot of like thoughtful self-reflection you don't see in a show. So his thing is, the main character's thing is he's always like berating himself, right? Like self-depreciating jokes. And there's a whole episode where like all the guys in his friend group just call him out on his shit. And it's like, man, you understand like that we're here for you, but like you need to stop that shit. And they explain why being consistently self-depreciating, it's like bad for him. They're like, I mean, it doesn't affect us, but like, here are the ways that it's going to affect you. And it's really, I think it's really thoughtful for anime to take that perspective, because you normally don't get that in these stories, you know? I think a lot of it like leans into that, ha ha ha, I stay inside, I play games all day kind of narrative. And this one actively combats that by saying like, you know, you wanting to improve yourself is great, but you also have to stop hiding behind the bullshit you put up about yourself as well. It's not just how you're talking to other people. It's also how you see yourself. So I actually very much enjoyed the second season of this, and I would probably watch a third season, assuming the writing keeps up the way it did. And I did not know. I honestly thought this would be a meme and I would drop it. I think it's even what I said in the pickup, but I did not regret my time with it. I don't know what to tell if someone wants to watch it, because it is kind of cringy sometimes, but it's like wholesome if it's cringiness. So yeah, that's the anime wrap up. Dropped over half the shows, kept under half of them, seems about right. A new season coming. Spice and Wolf's getting a season 2 that's going to start airing, I think, this week or next week, or the first episode already came off.
Wait, hold up. Spice and Wolf? Like, anime from like 10 years ago? Like,
yes, it's getting a season. I told you this. Yeah. Let me see. Has it already started airing? Let me see. Spice and Wolf. There's also a really cringy show. So apparently I've been told the American title of it makes it worse than it seems, but it's My Wife Got Reincarnated as a 10-year-old. I've been told apparently the title makes it sound a lot worse than it actually is.
That could go very wrong. I feel like the
I'm looking at some titles right now. I'm just gonna read titles to you. So here's another one: Studio Apartment, Good Lighting, Angel Included.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, also watch Frieren. I mean, it's not here, but I'm just gonna keep saying it. You should watch Frieren. Yeah, I don't know if Spice and Wolf has started airing yet, but yeah, there's a new Spice and Wolf season happening. There's a lot of stuff going on right now, so I'm here for it. You know, always love a new season. And yeah, where's Villainess 90 level 99?
No, you did not put it.
Did I not include this show? Oh, it's a show I started watching afterwards. Okay, so I'm actually gonna add this here, because this is a show that started airing after an anime pickup, which is actually why I decided to wait for this new one. So here we go. We got Villainess level 99. I may be the hidden boss, but I'm not the demon lord, which is basically this girl gets reincarnated in the world of a dating sim. This is also another, the main characters are so lovable that it's very fun to watch, but the narrative's not that deep. I'm going to add it to there. It's a good like weekend watch if someone wants to binge through it.
So we got the only one I kind of want to watch is the A Sign of Affection, but like maybe like Solo Leveling, we'll see. Now that they're finished, I just can't do the thing where I watch shows week to week. I just forget, and I just like don't watch it, and then I'm like, oh good, I have to wait till the end of the season to actually catch up. So that's how it goes. So it's better when shows have like a full season or two before I get into them, for me at least. So let's talk about Phil Spencer, because he's talking a lot in the press. He's been for some reason like he's just
to be clear, this section is titled "Why Does Phil Spencer Keep Opening His Mouth?"
why does he keep being in the news? So there are a few items here. The first one is that Phil Spencer wants Epic Game Store and other game stores on Xbox consoles. And this doesn't surprise me really at this point, right? Like, I think this is not really surprising. I think Microsoft is just moving towards being like a platform where they sell you services. Like, they're not trying to like they're like, hey, all of you come over here, we'll just take a little bit off the top here, and that's it. Like, we're going to provide this platform, we're going to have this hardware, and you can just put all your services on it, and we'll make money off of that. Like, that's the play there. They're playing like a platform role, like wider platform role, rather than like playing like the exclusives sort of market. Sort of the old style of having exclusives. Is this gonna happen? Like, I don't know if this is gonna happen, because Mr. what's his name, Tim Sweeney, like Epic Games is like always been like their party line basically is at this point is like, we don't want to pay anybody a cut. Like, we just want to sell games. We want to sell our game. And we don't want to pay anybody a cut. And that's that seems to be the thing. And I don't know if this is enough for Epic Games to consider putting like their store on the console, but we'll see.
No, I think it'll happen for a few reasons. First being, it's very much apparent that subsidizing consoles and trying to make it up in service sales is not working, right? Sony's reporting dropped revenues, Microsoft's reporting dropped revenues, and guess who isn't? Nintendo. And why does Nintendo not have like huge profit losses? Because they sell shit for a profit.
Yeah, and they never discount their games, which it's not to be like not to be something to be forgotten about, because this, a lot of players, like, you could get games like cheap, but like Nintendo games, like, you know, the only way you're getting it for cheap is if you buy like a used copy of a game, but they never go on sale on the eShop. So you're gonna have to pay full price. It like Super Mario Brothers or whatever, like you're paying full price for that right now. Like you're not, it's not gonna be cheap. So that's another thing.
Right. But what I'm saying here is, so what I imagine for the next generation, to be frank, is I imagine Microsoft's gonna keep making consoles. I do not believe in any capacity that they're gonna stop making hardware, in the same way that I don't believe servers will ever stop being made, right? And I think the reason behind for Xbox and for Surface, for like those two never going away, is right now, you know, whatever you feel about AI, right? You know for a fact, like Microsoft senior leadership is like, fuck, we should have had a phone right now. You're like, you know for a fact that they're regretting the fact that they do not own a phone platform. So for that reason alone of, you know, maybe today Xbox is losing, but you never know in the future. And it's not much more expensive to run Surface as a business, right? You know, or Xbox as a business. I do not foresee those ever being like drops. But I do think what's going to happen is they're going to start increasing the prices on hardware. And then they're going to start opening up the stores and then just push Game Pass. Because I think at that point, it's kind of win-win-win. You know, you won't sell less consoles, but if you increase the prices, you'll start making money on them. You still have Game Pass people, because Game Pass is a different model than the stores, right? And you still have the Xbox store if you want to take the 30% cut. But if you want to get people to buy your hardware, which you're still making a profit off of, you can just say, hey, Valve, you want to put Steam on the Xbox? Go for it. Or Epic, you want to put Epic Games on the Xbox? Go for it. And that'll attract people to buy the hardware, which is not being sold out of profit. I don't foresee subsidized consoles happening anymore from Sony or Microsoft. I don't think it's going to happen for either. And
right. Yeah. I think this is the last generation of them.
And I also think that we're kind of wishcrafting, but it really seems like they're at least taking seriously expanding out Xbox just to be like an OS or a certification, right? Versus like an actual box. And I mean by that is because I think some gamers online, when this news dropped, are kind of like, well, why would I have an Xbox if there's game stores on it? I would just buy a PC. Which I say to that, Static, if somebody owns a PC,
yeah.
Tell me this. How much of a pain in the ass would it be to just hook it up to your TV and play with a controller exclusively?
A big pain in the ass. It's very heavy. I need to move it to the living room. But also
Windows does not work with controller.
No, yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, it's not a good time. Like I still think this comes up a lot in conversations I've had with people on Mastodon and elsewhere, and I've heard it on podcasts, is this console still have that sort of living room aspect to it. Like you could just like put the box under your TV, connect it to your TV, and you're good to go, right? Like you don't have to worry about it. Like that shit still, and the UI is made for use of the controller, right, and all that. And a PC is just not gonna, like, yeah, you can connect a PC to your TV, sure, but it's not gonna, it's just not like it's a little janky. It's just not as smooth of an experience. It's like, you know, yeah, you can use like Steam Big Picture mode or something like that, but
also Xbox OS is built for like weird audio and video setups on TVs, whereas let's say you hook up a soundbar to your PC, how do you get that routed in a way that works nicely, right? Like how do you get eARC going on a PC? I don't even think Windows has really great support for that. So what I think, there's a market for, like, even if it's a PC, for computers that plug in nicely to a TV. That exists. Like, people buy Chromecast and stuff for a reason. So I don't think that's an issue of, you know, oh, why not just get a PC? If you're the kind of person who has consoles at your desk, buy a PC. Yes, if you sit at your desk and use your Xbox or PS5 with a monitor, you'd probably be better served with a PC. Plug a computer to it. But for the people who plug it into the TV, you know, having a more open market where, let's say, Xbox is certification, where it's just, you know, minimum spec, you need this, right, matches with the Xbox Series S or Series X in terms of horsepower, and then Asus, whoever, HP can make their own boxes. I don't see how that's a bad thing. I really don't see how that's a bad thing. And I think gamers who are like, well, that means, you know, that my camp isn't special, or that, you know, it's like, why do I need an Xbox? It's like, yeah, brand loyalty sucks. Like, you don't. If you're better served by your PC and the games are on it, go buy a PC. Buy the hardware that works best for you. You know, stop trying to play Overwatch on the fucking Switch if you have it hooked up to a monitor, you weirdo, and just play it on a computer.
All right. So I know, speaking of like Xboxes, there's also my Spencer.
Speaking about handhelds, would have been their segue. I just want to let you know that.
That's true. True. Speaking of handhelds,
that sucks at playing Overwatch.
Phil Spencer's out here just saying shit about like a handheld Xbox, and about how he can't stop thinking about it. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, when an executive says something like this in the press, like, what does that even like actually mean? Really? And I don't know what to make of this. And obviously, yes, Microsoft is going to be thinking about making a handheld, because the handheld market is like, just over the last couple of years, it's just blown up. It's just getting bigger. The introduction of the Steam Deck has sort of revitalized this segment of like gaming hardware. So there's so much.
Also, really good power efficient APUs right from AMD. I think it's also as well has been helping.
Yeah, AMD is the one like winning in this right now, because AMD is just selling all these fucking CPUs.
NVIDIA doesn't have a part for it. You can't put a mobile G. You could, but the power draw is too high, right? Like, they go 60 watts alone for it, so you need an APU for a handheld device.
And all of these have like AMD chips in them, AMD APUs in them, and so these. And I could see this. I could see a handheld. Now my question is: do you think it's going to be like this, the PlayStation Portal or whatever it's called, or is it going to be like an actual console with like its own CPU? Like, it's not just streaming off of xCloud or whatever. Like, is that
I think they're gonna try and get AMD. I think that the reason Phil's saying he really is dreaming about it is I don't think there's a downscale APU that can cover what the Series S covers, because if they're going to do it right, it would have to be the Series S package, you know, spec for spec what the Series S is, but in an APU that can run on a battery. And I think that's the reason why they're kind of talking about it, but they're not committing to it or announcing anything. Even is just because I'm unsure if that part exists. But in a few years, it's totally possible, right? Because that's like, what, 8 gigs of RAM. It's like a 8 gigabyte, you know, GPU. And it's based like a 6600-ish part. So in a generation or two, I'm pretty sure you could probably fit that into an APU and have a pretty good experience, especially since most Series S games run at 1080p, 720p, which, you know, it looks kind of blurry on a TV for sure, but on a, you know, 720p portable OLED or 1080p OLED, that's not a problem.
That's fine. Yeah, that's the thing. I think we're still a little bit far away from this actually happening, but considering like the market, if it continues, like, you know, the Asus ROG Ally, the Lenovo Legion Go, and maybe we get a next generation of Steam Deck. We're not sure about that, but like, I think
it just makes sense, right? Like, I think me, you, anyone, you know, we all have our different thoughts on like what the gaming that we like, but I feel like, you know, I've used the ROG Ally. You just play it and you're like, I can see the downsides to this, but like, I can see how, I've said it before, you know, I would buy an Xbox handheld and probably make that my primary gaming thing, just because, you know, I don't have like a gaming setup right now where I have like a dedicated gaming area. You know, it would just, I would be okay with that. Go anywhere, take it with me. Like, it just makes sense. But I think there's just a little bit of a part push there that's just that parts aren't ready for it. But, and I also think it's why to talk about multiple game stores and stuff, because if you're Phil Spencer, you're like, if we're going to make an Xbox handheld and AMD and our partners or our Asus are all making these Windows ones, these need to be the same SKU, right? Like, we can't have the Xbox team and someone else on the Windows team also be trying to build the same thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Phil Spencer's, I think, is actually smart here, because he's indirectly saying we can't go Google messaging with this shit.
that's not a good strategy. And also, this is the funny thing about this particular little bit of Phil Spencer talking to the press, is that he was he said that I want my Lenovo Legion Go to feel like an Xbox, which he said at an interview in GDC. And he's like, the funny example he provided is that he's going crazy that Fallout 76 doesn't have cross save. And I'm just sitting here like, you know, Steve mentioned this on the Game Is Next video as well. It's like, you know, I feel like you could make that happen. Maybe like, you know, maybe you could just like call somebody over at Bethesda and have them like have a team like make Fallout 76 cross save. Maybe I don't see it's like, you know, that kind of thing.
But that's a good thing, though. I mean, it's funny. Yes. But if there's one thing that I've learned, when executives are personally inconvenienced and it also aligns with shit that we are inconvenienced about, we all win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Like if this means that everything is cross save, yeah, hell yeah. Like cross save is just a straight up just a good thing. Like it's 100% upside. There's no downside to it. Like it's just straight up good. So yeah, and he's also talking about the stuff like I talk about, like the dashboard, right? The Xbox UI and all that. Like he wants the social stuff. Like he's talking a lot of the social stuff. And I don't know how much I care about that, but like he seems to think it's really important to have like the Xbox social stuff be part of it, which,
well, I think it works for teens, right? You know, maybe like, are people really into Xbox? Because from our perspective, we use Signal, we use other chat apps, but when I was younger, right, like I mean this is before Discord was a thing, but like we had IRC and stuff, but like Xbox parties were a thing people use, and that people probably still use it because it's built into the system. And so what I think is going to happen here is I think there's going to be a special SKU of Windows for these handhelds that is maybe a desktop mode, but just more of an Xbox dashboard interface. Honestly, for these devices specifically, I think the Windows 8 style thing where the desktop's just an app makes sense. Because unless you're hooking up to a monitor, I do not know anyone, and I know some of you sickos are out there, but no one's writing code on the ROG Ally. It's great that you can, right?
Yeah, you probably can. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Meanwhile, though, in Europe, it's very funny. There's a report from Kotaku about during GDC, a lot of developers are like, why should we keep supporting Xbox? And I have a different take on this maybe than the Doomer take, which is you shouldn't. Xbox and PC should be the same fucking platform at this point. I think like you should just be able to like build a PC build. The SDK should be similar enough that you can just build one SKU. And then, you know, Xbox can just be a performance preset. Like that's really what it should be at this point.
Yeah. I there's increasingly it's not it's building for Windows, really. It's just you're just making a Windows build and then sort of goes over to Xbox and then it runs like you have the performance reset. Yeah, it's just I think this is just like this press sort of like what is happening? Like why is like go back to the question of this segment is that why is Phil Spencer on some sort of press circuit like right now? Like what's going on? Like it's a
I would call this a vision trip.
A vision.
just to be honest.
Yeah.
Phil Spencer's vision trip.
God. So there we have like a little bit of actual more serious news, I suppose, more actual concrete, I suppose. Windows Central apparently had an exclusive on this, which great for Windows Central, I guess. Xbox president Sarah Bond set up a new team dedicated to game preservation and forward compatibility. I suppose this is sort of a continuation of like what was happening with the sort of Xbox original Xbox game or Xbox 360 games on like Xbox Series consoles, right? Is that what is going on? Like, is this like just like
right to basically make sure that backwards compat expanded, right? So more backwards compatibility titles could get added. Hopefully, you know, like the Activision Blizzard stuff, and also make sure that, you know, future generations that can run current Xbox games that are supported. And I think what's important about us, especially in context of why Phil Spencer keeps opening his mouth, is I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with the idea of game consoles just being computers, but they've always just been computers. And Microsoft is openly speaking about that fact. And given they're losing, they're kind of in a, we can just try whatever right now. And I think it doesn't matter because even if they were fully committed, are people going to sell their PS5s for Xbox? No. So, I mean, I think we've memed about it before, but the DMA is going to come from game consoles eventually, right? I do not see why Europe would not eventually force Nintendo and Sony to open up their systems because they are just computers. especially Nintendo, who sells it for a profit. So I think this is partially just seeing where the world's going, and also realizing that turning this into a service, turning it into a platform for other people to sell games on, in the long term is going to net you more lasting impact. Because if you look at Windows, like Windows is the example of this, right? Windows, Linux, and Mac OS have stood the test of time because anyone can sell software on it, right? You do not have to go through one vendor or one store. Whereas mobile is relatively new. You know, we have 40 years of desktop computers showing that openness for selling software and letting people just build business off of it always wins. And for the 10 years we had of mobile where people have been trying to close it down, governments are saying, no, you need to open it up like desktop computers. So I think if I'm someone, you know, running a video game platform right now, I'm kind of thinking, well, I think we need to architect ourselves to be a services platform, you know, company, and not like a whole end-to-end, you know, business from selling games to making the hardware.
Yeah, you're not doing the full, you're not trying to do the Apple vertical integration thing, right? Like, it's just like, it's not favorable. Regulators don't like it. Regulators are increasingly hostile to it. Just get out of it while you can. Like, just get out of the market, build stuff that's like more open in the sense that it allows people to sell their shit without too much restriction. You know, you can still make money off that. And the thing is, long term, I think you make more money off of that if more and more people just use your platforms, right? Like, I think it's just the setup. It's
especially when I don't think anyone knows where the market's heading. Can I think, Beer, you could say, like, is gaming PC sustainable? Probably not. I don't know right now. Like, the amount of layoffs we're having right now, I'm just taking like an actual look at things. Like, I don't know what's the next step. Does everyone just start getting VR headsets and, you know, VR becomes the next big thing? No. Is it mobile? Is it?
No. VR is never. Okay. This is my hot take. VR is never going to become mainstream unless we solve the big problem with VR, which is the human body. Unless we can figure out how to like augment our internal organs. To be able to,
that's a new sentence. Like, no, I get you know what I'm saying. Right? Yeah, no, I get you.
You know what I mean, right? Like, human bodies are not compatible with virtual reality. It's just not. Like, it's no matter.
But the reason I bring this up, though, the reason I bring it up is that I think none of us could really say where this year is going to end at, right? And I think if you're running a gaming platform, the smartest idea is, well, we should just be wherever it's at. Let's look at Office as the example, right? You can get Office on basically fucking anything, including Chromebooks, and that has resulted in people not leaving Office, and also competitive pressure because Microsoft decided to kill Slack. That's a whole other different podcast. But outside of that, but like, I think it's been a net beneficial thing. You can get Microsoft Excel or Word on a fucking toaster up to like, you know, a $10,000 gaming PC. And I don't disagree with that being like the wrong take to just let things be cross-platform.
Yeah, it's better. It's actually just better for everyone to have that sort of, you know.
Like, why is having Steam on your Xbox a bad thing? I just need to go back to that. People are actually here saying that having Steam on Xbox is a bad thing. Why do you need to rebuy games? You know, like for you said, like, what if you could just buy a cheap Xbox to put in your living room? So let's say you want to relax and not be at your desk, and you wanted to play games you already own. Spending $200 for a Series S, even if it's lower fidelity, just so you can unwind, play like a little, you know, side-scrolling game or something that will run at 60 FPS. There's nothing wrong with that. And that should be something you should be able to do.
Exactly. There's no technical reason that Steam can't run on a console. It's just all of this stuff is just like arbitrarily like weird gatekeeping happening. So it's just like, open that shit up. Why not? Let's get that. So let's wrap up. It's been a good episode. I think a lot of, we got anime, we got music, we got video game.
The three things on our bingo card: anime, Beyonce, and Phil Spencer.
All right. This has been episode 6. Voxels. You can find the show notes. Voxels.fm. You can send us emails. What is it? What is the address? Feedback.
Feedback@voxels.fm.
Yep. Feedback@voxels.fm. Send us emails. You can find me on the Fediverse at PacketCat at 10forward.social and on my website, SouthEastSave.com. Christian, where do people find you on the internet?
Yep, you can find me posting hot takes online at lofi-carrots at mstn.plus. You can find my website, tristfine.website. And yeah, until next time, transphobia has no place in hip-hop. Go home, and play or watch Suzume.
Yeah, watch Suzume. Goodbye.
Bye.